Hi, thanks for joining us on Hometown to Hollywood. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide and Young Hollywood Actors, and today my guest on this podcast is director and producer Andy Fickman. Andy has directed many film, TV, and theater projects, but he is best known for his work directing She's the Man, You Again, Race to Witch Mountain, Parental Guidance, The Game Plan, Kevin Can Wait, Liv and Maddie, Reefer Madness, and Heathers the Musical, both off-Broadway and in London. He's currently directing No Good Nick for Netflix and will direct Paramount's upcoming Playing with Fire, starring John Cena, in 2019. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Bonnie.
I'm so happy to have you.
I'm happy to be had.
Well, you're having me because I'm in your offices, which are like a shrine.
It is. For our listeners who can only imagine, it is sort of walking into the Liv and Maddie world. So as Bonnie is talking, she's getting judgy eyes from a billion photos of her daughter all over the office. So she's really well covered.
It's a little overwhelming. It's also pretty great. So I just want to delve into you, your background. I've known you for a while now.
A long time now.
Since, oh gosh, since Dove was 16.
We've survived. This is longer than most Hollywood marriages.
Right?
That is, and it's still going great. Love you
it
very
is.
Much.
Love you too. But you're not from here. Most of the people that I know in the industry are also not from here. You grew up in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
When did you know that you wanted to direct and produce?
Weirdly enough, even before, so before we moved to Houston, we grew up in Midland, Texas, West Texas, and my father was a part of the Midland Community Theater. And when I was, my earliest memories, I think 5 years old or so, was backstage. My dad was putting on makeup and getting ready to go perform. He was a geologist and a paleontologist for Shell Oil in his day job. But his real love was theater. And so my earliest memories really were, my dad went on stage and made people laugh. And so they put me in an acting, kids acting class when I was about five. And I stayed doing that all the way through college. And all I really wanted to do was act. But in high school, by the time we moved to Houston, the high school I went to, Robert E. Lee, our amazing teacher, Linda Schuler, had created a performing troupe in Houston called Razzmatazz, which was kind of like Saturday Night Live. And every year there was a student director, and I ended up getting to be the student director, which meant I was not only writing sketches along with my peers, I got to direct them. And that was a pretty amazing experience because I started feeling it. I felt like, oh, I like this. Then I was on a theater scholarship in the beginning at University of Houston as an actor, and I had an epiphany. I was doing a play, a wonderful play, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, and I all of a sudden had an out-of-body experience where I was watching this amazing director direct, and I stopped listening to what I was supposed to be doing and just started watching, thinking, oh, what if you did that? What if you did this? And I knew then I didn't want to act anymore. I knew I wanted to direct and write and produce, but I really didn't know if I was going to, if that was just a pursue it or not sort of feeling. I ended up transferring to Texas Tech in Lubbock. It's like the Hollywood of West Texas. If Hollywood of West Texas was in Lubbock. But I got so active. I was president of my fraternity. I was student body vice president. And I found myself, in retrospect, learning to direct being active with all the things I was doing. I was delegating. I was creating ideas. I was seeing them, you know, through. The art of producing is to produce, to take nothing and turn it into something. And that's what I was doing. And so by the time I graduated and I moved straight to Hollywood, I had an uncle, my uncle Jerry, who lived in Long Beach, who offered me a couch and a place to go. But I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how the industry worked. I had my degree in mass communications, and I came out here.
Wow.
And so it was then that I knew sort of, I knew I wanted to try, I guess maybe from high school on, but every day was kind of more of a, yeah, I think I'm leading in this direction.
That's wonderful. And it just fills my heart to hear that it's community theater and hanging out with your dad, watching him do it, that's what opened up these doors for you.
No, it is every bit of my roots are that community theater. My love of theater, which really has probably been when I was in Lubbock, I got a chance to start directing theater locally. So my love of community theater is kind of what gave me all of my opportunities. When I first got to L.A., myself and a wonderful actor named Andrew Schaefer, we helped create with some amazing people a theater company called the Fountainhead Theater Company, which is currently a part of the Hudson Complex. When we started, Liz Riley and Gary Blumsack and Andrew and I and our company were all building that complex. So the same place that ultimately gave birth to Reefer Madness and to Heather's also was my original home. My name is carved in the cement and the theater, which makes me very happy. But community theater and that, had I not had that experience, I don't know. I don't know if I would have. I think I always loved film and television and theater, but, you know, I'm so grateful for my father for doing that. My mom, who was always trying to help, and she would do the volunteer community theater. You volunteer. Yep. And she volunteered. She was working the light board. And so my mom was, Ruth was not born to work the light board. And back then, the light boards were these old, like, switches where it was kind of like pull the gear, red gear, black gear. And they were doing a production of Fiddler on the Roof that my father was starring in. And my mom blacked out the entire theater during the production. So while my father really brought me full on in, my mother still was very supportive. And truthfully, had my mom not been the one driving me to every acting class, everything, like, mom, I wouldn't have had any of these opportunities without my parents providing the way.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that, because it's a critical and often completely invisible component of almost anybody's success in this industry.
It you know, unless you start at the age of 18, and some people do. Some people, I've met people who all of a sudden just were like, I think I want to act, and they start acting. Unless you start it sans any involvement of your parents, any support of your parents, it's ridiculous not to look at where the basis is. Even to say I want to do a school play, which was my life, meant you were asking your parent to come pick you up later. Somebody, you know, I didn't have a car until it was later in high school. But you are in a partnership with your parents' approval.
Yeah.
You are, and when you are not doing it in the beginning of your career and there's no financial upside, not that you do it, but that you are essentially, from the time I'm 5 to the time I'm 18, I'm going to volunteer my services wherever I can for the experience.
Yep.
And occasionally, and remember, in Texas, you know, if I grew up in L.A., I'd have experience. I'd have maybe opportunities. In Texas, few, you know, every once in a while I'd get a commercial or something, but
right.
That was few and far between. So it was for the love of the game.
Yeah.
And so without my mom and my dad passed away when I was 16, so my mom really continued that drive. But there is no part of me here that isn't based on them. And as a side note to that, my grandmother, Adele, who is from Stevens Point, Wisconsin, where we live in Maddie. My mom was born in Stevens Point. So my grandmother was... had her own radio program when, you know, I guess during the Depression, called Adele Sings, and she loved film. And so whenever as a kid we would go up from Texas to Stevens Point, my grandmother had stacks of all the old photoplay magazines and I would just go through, and you know, my grandmother would be like, do you know anything about Joan Crawford? And then she would tell me. So I feel I've had this blessing And then I see it continue. My son Austin is a film student at USC. My nephew Sam, who was a film grad at Emerson and is now out here in Hollywood writing scripts and working as an editor and does social media direction for our company. My other nephew Daniel, a wonderful actor who just got to LA and landed a job in radio. And so I feel like there is another generation now who looks through sort of what I did, but I'm looking up above that, and it's pretty awesome.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And so you land on your uncle's couch.
Yeah.
How did you get started directing? How did that happen? Because this is the story for so many people. It's like you got the dream, you got the drive, you get here, now what?
You know, it is, I think it's the classic, if you knew the truth about how hard it was going to be and what the odds were, you just don't do it. My mom said when I graduated, and I said I was coming here, and I had been offered a job to like Procter & Gamble, I think, was tracking me to come be a sales rep, and I had a job opportunity at an ad agency in Houston. They all sounded great. And my mom said, well, why are you going to Hollywood? Why do you think you can make it if no one else, most people don't? And the most pure response was, well, Mom, somebody makes it. Why can't it be me?
Right.
And it didn't even dawn on me when I look back now at, like, what was the roadblocks. And I just kind of needed to get my feet and sort of going. And I got here, and I had no secretarial assistant skills. I was horrible at it. So the traditional work your way up was going to be a challenge. I had a job interview, the wonderful, Shirley Jones, Mrs. Partridge, her was looking for an assistant, and her current assistant met with me, and I was so excited because I was like, I'm doing it. And I remember I went to this interview that was near CBS, I think, and really the job was inputting Shirley's Rolodex into like finding the Christmas card. It was all important assistant skills that required someone to know how to do a computer. And I had no skills. And that person, when they asked what I wanted to do, they said, you should keep trying that route. So so they sort of saved me. And then my first, I was literally sidebarring thinking if I couldn't get hired, I was going to go join the Navy. My grandfather had been sort of a career Marine. My father had been in the Air Force. So military seemed like a good option just to get my feet on the ground. And then I got a job as a tour guide at Universal Studios.
Oh, my God.
And it was, I'd been here for maybe a month. And by the way, to this day, still one of the hardest jobs to ever get.
I believe it.
You had to audition like multiple times. You kept coming back. And I loved it. I ended up, it's one of my favorite jobs. I did it for the summer. And then that job led to me going in the mailroom at an agency called Triad, which ultimately became merged with William Morris, and then ultimately was absorbed with Endeavor. And my agency, I'm at WME, is the agency essentially where I started in the mailroom. So now I'm represented by where I delivered the mail.
That's fabulous.
But I was looking for opportunities. I had not gone to film school. I didn't have a reel. I had just directed theater, but I knew I needed more theater. And I met a wonderful actress whose sister worked at Triad, and she said, hey, we're looking for, we're going to do a play. We've gathered some actors, and we're going to put a play together called A Weekend Near Madison. And they were looking for a director, and I had a couple of theater credits under my belt, and I was looking for any production. I would literally direct I would come to your house and just direct your wake-up speech. I would do phone calls for you. And that group came together, and we had the most wonderful time. We went to the Powerhouse Theater in Santa Monica. The show, we were not a theater company per se. The show became a massive hit, and all of these, the critics were so lovely. And that group is what then became the Fountainhead Theater Company.
Wow.
So from that moment, I started getting the chance to direct. And really, had it not been Fountainhead, I would not have had the opportunity to showcase my talent, to learn. So I ended up doing, I was doing my Hollywood day job. I ended up leaving Triad and doing development for the remarkable Gene Wilder.
Oh my God.
So I was working for Gene and his producing partner, Susan Ruskin, at a company called Pall Mall Productions. And I would work doing development during the day, and at night I'd go direct theater. And then I'd stay up all night, you know, painting sets. And at that point we were raising money and trying to, you know, we would do garage sales. So every weekend we would sell crap because we needed to raise money to put on a show. And the show we figured cost about $3,000 to rent a theater and put on a show. So every weekend at whoever's place we could do a garage sale, we would do it. And everybody else's. So I was like, so I ended up, that kind of led to things. And then that led to more opportunities. I started branching out, and eventually And during my day job, I went from Gene to heading development for Bette Midler. And so I was with Bette and her producing partner, Bonnie Bruckheimer, at All Girl Productions. I was the all boy at All Girl.
I was going to say.
And I was still directing theater at night. And at one point I had Andrew Schaefer had a wonderful one-man show that we were doing that ran forever. And I was doing other kind of one-man, one-woman shows. And then the opportunity arose for me to do Reefer Madness. And at that point, I had moved on to a company that became Middle Fork Productions, who was owned in by the wonderful Verna Harrow, who's no longer with us. And that is where I met my producing partner, Betsy Selinger.
Betsy, who's been on the podcast.
Betsy and I were, that's where we bonded over theater. And at that time, Reefer Madness became a massive hit in L.A., broke every sort of record, won sort of every award, and people were now coming to me and saying, hey, you want to think about directing? I still didn't have a reel, and I had also, at that point, I was producing, and I had started writing. I wrote under a pseudonym because I didn't want people, it was sort of not kosher for development execs to be writing.
Uh-huh.
So I wrote under the name John Philip. John was my middle name, Philip my father's name.
Nice.
And I went out with the script, and people were calling and trying to meet with the writer. At the time, one of my dear friends, Gina Matthews, had put the script out, and she was like, no one's going to buy it, but they want to meet with you. And I was like, I don't exist. And eventually I got hired to write my first script and for real. And so that kind of was leading that after I got my first producing credit, a baby producer on Anaconda, which became a big hit for us. And around that time, Anaconda, Reefer Madness, it became clear being an executive was not what I wanted. I really wanted to direct and write and produce. And so the producing was working because of Anaconda. Mm-hmm. And then Verna and Betsy and Susan gave me an opportunity to Susan Ruskin, who had been with Gene Wilder, was now with Verna as well. They gave me an opportunity to do my first sort of low-budget indie teen comedy called Who's Your Daddy? And it was a film school for me. I learned everything, both good and bad,
right,
of what to do and not to do on a movie, on that movie. And that literally led to Reefer Madness being done for Showtime. And that was it. Once that was done, I was off.
Doors were open.
Doors were open, you know, and you look at it as the, you know, I always tell people, there is no route that is can be compared to another person's route. All of our journeys are different.
Yep.
And all of our time frame is different. It is hard to say, you look at a wonderful actor like James Gandolfini, who was so ridiculously talented his whole life, but it's not till The Sopranos that all of a sudden he has this boom moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at those sort of storytelling elements, and you just don't know when it's your time. I always try to encourage people that in a world in which you are just having to seize opportunities in a town that is a tough town, a hard industry, and an industry that, quite frankly, doesn't really want or need any of us. If I quit today, Hollywood does not be like, Andy, come back. They literally have a call to be like, oh, that's, who's going to direct that movie that he was going to do? Like, I am.
It's true.
It's out. Like, there's no, while we will be hopefully missed, we do not impact the industry by our individual sort of moment. We hopefully provide and add, and I don't want to live in a world where Spielberg's not making movies, but they were making movies before, they'll make movies after, and that's kind of your, you realize, like, if every journey is different, and recognizing when your window is, and your ability to just stay the course, just go that ride. So all of that makes you kind of look at your career and think, like, I don't know if that was the normal route of being an executive for so long and then swapping over. I don't, like, it just happened to be my route.
Yep. And that's why I love to do these podcasts because, you know, yeah, everybody's path is different, but you can learn so much just by listening to everybody else's path and go, oh, all right, maybe I'm going to try this then.
Yeah.
Or all right, that's normal and not crazy. I'm, you know, it's just helpful.
And that's also so important for people to realize that all of us have started at the same place. We've all come from a different world to this. And even if you're born into it, no one is giving you, maybe you get a couple of free passes in and maybe you meet some more people, but what you do with it is up to you and how you deliver. No one's going to continue hiring you just because you know somebody or you're connected to someone or related to someone. You got to deliver. And then for everybody else, you still got to deliver.
Exactly,
and
right.
But you know, I have two brothers who are lawyers. They're amazing lawyers. They went to law school. They're practicing what they are trained to do. One of my brothers is an engineer. He's an amazing engineer. He went to college to become an engineer. He is paid to do what he is trained to do. That is not Hollywood. So when you graduate and you're like, well, I've got my degree, you know,
I'm going to go be it.
I'll be over here. Where do I take my degree to direct? And they'll be like, I don't know, but why don't you go lug that cable and be a PA for the next 20 years
right.
and see where that leads you.
Thank you. That's so helpful to get the sense of perspective and especially with something as like, I want to say almost esoteric as directing. It's like, how the heck do you get from here to there? The answer is every different way and no way. And I love hearing your story. I want to turn for a second to your eyes as a lens for actors. You know, what do you look for in a young actor, in an actor in general, as a director?
You know, it's so almost cliche to say the X factor, but it is the X factor. Every actor, including your amazing daughter, that I've ever had the opportunity to work with has sparkled at some point in the early stage of me seeing them. There's a sparkle in the audition. There was a sparkle in the meeting. There was a sparkle that made you believe that there was a talent that you could work with. Directing to me is a kind of 50-50 proposition. I don't want to be a puppeteer. I don't want to be a marionette operator, moving your feet from left to right. I want to meet you halfway. Here are my ideas. What are your ideas? And then let's see where that takes us. Sometimes I might be right. Sometimes you might be right. Sometimes we both might be right. Sometimes we both might be wrong. And the guy at craft service has a better idea. I'll take that one. I'll take any good idea from anyone. But you have to have the ability to pop. And that's both on stage, screen, film, television, all versions of it. You have to pop. And sometimes you pop specifically for a role. And maybe that limits you because maybe you never get beyond that role. We all get in our wheelhouse. We all get a little pigeonholed in terms of where people are going to typecast us. But if you don't pop initially, I'm just then looking at someone to say lines. And I've got enough actor friends. I'm just going to hire them because I've already directed that guy or that girl in a show 10 years ago, they can deliver those 10 lines and they'll be great and I'd love to see them again. So I'm looking for someone that I want to spend time creating something with and is also going to make me a better director. I want to rise up to what they're doing, and I've been lucky in my career. This is me knocking on wood, actual wood. I've been lucky in my career because I think I've had the opportunity to just be inspired by so many amazing actors.
That's a beautiful thing to say, and I know it goes both ways. I know that everybody that I know who's ever worked with you has just loved it, and I know that Dove would jump at the chance to work with you again.
Another big part of that is sort of the lifelong experience, the opportunity to have worked with Dove for so long, the opportunity to work with The Rock, the opportunity to work with Kristen Bell, the opportunity to work with so many Kevin James, so many actors over and over again, to me is just, again, part of the exciting process. And then it's the list of people I'm always like, when's my next time to work with Kristen Chenoweth? Because I love working with her so much that I'm just looking. So every script I read like a bullet point for every actor I know. Could that be that perk? What about that? Got to check. Sending an email. Are you available for... That's literally my world.
That's cool. That's perfect. It segs me right into the question, what advice do you have for a young actor approaching an audition?
A couple of things. One is, for me, the failure of most people is the belief that the audition begins when they start. The audition begins the minute you walk through that door. The audition begins the minute I sense your personality. Are you funny? Are you interesting? Are you challenging? Are you... But I'm also looking in the other way. Are you sullen? Are you nervous? Are you lacking confidence? The camera or the audience will see all of those blemishes. And the actor who comes in without confidence, it's hard for me then to think, you'll gain it. I can't wait to have you gain the confidence in the middle of your performance. I'm looking for somebody who's got confidence. It's great when you're making choices. By the way, even if you make not a choice that I would have made, you're making choices. So I always feel like actors need to know walking in the waiting room. I can't tell you how many times I will ask the receptionist or ask the assistant how they were sitting in the waiting room. And were they personable? Were they nice? Were they polite? Or the other way, when I've heard an actor came in and was really rude to the assistant and then came in here and turned on the charm, it annoys me because it makes me believe that I was somehow the benefit because I'm the director. But no, you got to treat my crew the exact same way you're going to treat me. Knowing your stuff, I am taking time to watch you. I don't want to hear that, you know, the dog ate your homework. I don't want to hear that you just got these. Like, if you start your audition telling me all the reasons you're going to fail, then why are you even auditioning? It's me standing up and showing my movie and being like, hey, had I had 5 more days and $5 million more dollars, this thing would kill. Anyway, enjoy my movie. So it's kind of coming in. I don't like if you aren't off book, which is fine, then don't cover your face with the script. At least find a way to be able to read and look. Have a sense. I've auditioned actors who it felt like they're reading it for the first time. They're stumbling over words. And I'm like, hey, guess what? And today, you can literally say, Siri, how do I pronounce blah, blah, blah? So why stop in the middle of an audition and be like, I don't know what this word is? Because are you just seeing it for the first time? You could have taken 8 seconds. Or come in and use that personality to be, hey, before we start, before I butcher this word, can you help me? What is the? Great, then I'm engaging with you. So I think that there's it's a wrong sort of approach to just assume the audition begins and ends with the hi, my name is, and I'm reading for the role. Like, it's just, it's the whole thing. And sometimes I'll check, you know, if other people have worked with you, do they like working with you? Were you fun? Were you, you're building a family on set. You, as well as anyone, know my personality. My personality is 24/7 Mountain Dew. I am seldom, you know, I push every button you can think of. I am trying to make everyone laugh. My job is to build a family quickly. And so I'm also then looking like, are you going to be a part of this family? I don't think that there's an actor I've worked with that wouldn't, that doesn't understand me from day, like just come into the office and look around. And
but I wish everybody could see what I'm looking
but,
at right now.
But doesn't understand my energy.
Yeah.
But if you don't understand my energy, if you don't like my sense of humor, if you don't like my approach, I respect that. You're just not going to be a good mix for me and therefore my project. And sometimes as over the years while I try to, you know, as I talk to my actor friends and try and, you know, for every good piece of advice, I'll give 10 crappy pieces of advice as I'm trying to figure out how it works for them. And where one actor can take a piece of advice and just soar, the other actor can just crash with that same piece of advice.
Yeah.
So when actors really look at what the system is and understand, you know, it's not just I'm going to have you on set for 3 minutes. On a series, I'm going to live with you for 5 years. On a movie, I'm going to not be separated from you for 4 months every day, potentially. On theater, we're going to rehearse for 6 weeks, and then we're going to run. And so you bond so quickly. And then the minute it wraps, everyone goes on. And you don't not love everyone, and you are excited to see them, but you are into a new whirlwind.
Yeah.
And that new whirlwind has to encompass your entire body, mind, and soul in order to give them everything. And so I think a lot of actors make poor assumptions about the audition process. They make poor assumptions about just the conversation. If I ask you, hey, where are you from? I guaranteed I'm less interested in where you are from and more interested in your communication skill. What's your personality? Are you going to, because I like to improv. So if I threw you an improv, would you be thrown? Are you thrown by me talking to you? Do I scare you? Like, if all of that happens, then I'm probably not going to sign off on you being the person I should work with.
Yep. That's all just such good information, Andy. You, as a director, how often are you involved in the casting process? Also as a producer? So two different questions, but the same.
So it's a really interesting question that people ask a lot, and I realize that there's a mystery to all of this.
Yep, that's why I'm asking, because I know the answer.
and it's kind of different for each. I'll break it down for theater, television, and film.
Beautiful.
And first of all, our lifeblood is our casting directors. Our casting directors know the world. They know the actors. They've seen actors because the last project they saw actors. They know people. Directors sometimes are divided into two categories, a technical director and an actor's director. I fall more in the actor's director. I know actors. I come out of theater, so the actor's process with the director is where I started. I didn't start with the lens process. I didn't start with, you know, my job is to find a great DP to help me bring that vision to life. So casting directors, when we're doing theater, their job is to weed through, and then usually in theater, you and your authors, your book, music, lyrics, you are the group, along with your core producers, but primarily your creative team, your choreographer, who that creative team is, you're going through. But as the director, your voice is kind of the charging voice. I have to make sure I can direct you, and I don't want to block an actor. And sometimes that person might have in a musical the best voice for the role. I might not 100% think I want to work with them, or maybe think they're not right for the role, but I have to find a way, if they're the only one who can sing the part, to make it work. Mm. In television, if you are just a visiting director, as often the journeyman director, as most of the cases in episodic, you are lower on the casting side. Your input as a visiting director is usually that the executive producers who are driving all casting for television, those executive producers are sometimes like they're bringing an actor in to set them up for four episodes down the road that you might not have anything to do with. They know all the picadillos of all the actors. They know who looks good. So television is driven a lot by these executive producers. And while directors can chime in, it's not normally the director saying, this is my call. I have been blessed and lucky that in shows like Liv and Maddie and Kevin Can Wait, where I've been both a director and executive producer, which has then helped me be from day one, from pilots and all of that, really driving the casting process, along with, you know, with my EP partners. But it really enables you to be a part of that world. Film is a director's medium. Today I will leave here and I will go to a big casting session for Paramount for Playing With Fire, starring John Cena, that we start filming at the top of the year. Rich DeLeo is one of the greatest casting directors around, is casting, and I will be there, and I've already started narrowing it down, and I will be driving. My job is to make a presentation at the end, to go to the producers, in this case, Todd Garner, Sean Robbins, to go to Paramount, our executives, and to say, here's who I like. Sometimes on star level, you have a conversation with the casting departments, marketing, executives, and you say, here's five stars. We all agree this star, we're not going to audition them. We're going to make an offer to Dove. She'd be perfect. This is why. I can block that and say, no, in 1,000 years, I'll never work with her. And there's a chance that then we will go a different direction. But I tend to find that a good actor is a good actor. So I've never really been in a position where I've taken an actor that I didn't think was right for the role. But film really gives you that opportunity as the director. You're from the start to finish. I think somewhere along the line, some people get confused and think casting directors cast a thing or producers cast it and then directors show up and have it. The closest that exists is in television. The closest that exists is you show up on set. I didn't cast these actors. They've been doing the show for a year. And okay, that's my cast. I was not involved in that.
And I'm here for 3 weeks.
Can't wait to see everybody. Bye. So television, that sort of works. Theater and film are much more in line with the director taking the lead on that.
I'm so happy that you just completely split that out for a bit, because there's a huge amount of confusion about that. And it really is different in each of these mediums. I can't believe how much time we're running out of. There's so much I want to talk to you about.
You got time.
Okay, good. Do you have any different advice other than your general audition advice for people who are doing self-tapes? Because self-tapes, even if you live in LA or New York, are still a big part of the game.
Probably bigger now more than ever. Self-tapes have become, because the opportunities to self-tape, you know, years ago you had to go somewhere to have someone tape you, or the self-tapes were the concept of downloading them and getting them out. It all looked kind of sketchy. Now you can self-tape with your iPhone and a tripod and your setup, and the quality is fine. I think there are some things which are you lack the benefit of interaction. So coming in with a good personable, like, hi, how are you? Like, show me some personality. Don't assume with all auditions that I am going to see 100 people say the same line in a row. And then the line is, I love you, Bonnie, which I do. But if the line is, I love you, Bonnie, 100 people are going to say, I love you, Bonnie. The line no longer has impact for me. So I'm looking for the person delivering that line. The slight disadvantage of self-taping is I don't get an extra 2 minutes with you in the room, or we didn't have an exchange, or I couldn't say where you're from. Take advantage of the, like, if you say, hi, I'm Andy Fickman, I'm from Texas, say y'all, like, give me a little something in your personality. By the way, I'm a big boy. I can fast forward or not watch it if I don't want to. Don't assume, like, that I'm, because the assumption is that I, like, even more so, you don't want to blend in, you want to stand out. People make weird choices sometimes on their backgrounds. Like, I'm always mesmerized because I'll go to, like, why are you standing in front of that movie poster? Or why are you wearing, I've told this story before, and so I'll give her the love because she's amazing. But the ridiculously talented Katie Ladner, who's currently starring in Wicked right now. Katie had been our Martha in Los Angeles and New York for Heathers. And Katie's first audition, which was a self-tape, Katie auditioned wearing a red velvet, like, outfit. Her hair was red. Her lipstick was red. And her backdrop was red velvet. So it was, it looked like some bizarre floating head in a bordello. Like, and I remember, she's so talented, but our response was like, can you not do any of that? So I think you have to think, like, what it is, like, look, make it just, like, make sure I can see your face. Some people take weird angles. Like, I need to see your face. Smart when you do, if you're going to do your audition and you're doing sort of chest up, great. Do a full body shot so I understand, like, some perspective. The darkness sometimes, like, if you know that I can't see you, lighten it up, but I'd rather you stand with five lamps around you than me try, like, saying retape. And then, oddly enough, choosing wisely who's reading with you. I understand, and by the way, lots of casting directors are not giving you Shakespeare every time they read with you. And the theory always is they are not the performer, you are. But more times than not, sometimes a bad reader will either throw your performance or will be so distracting off camera. I'll hear, like, you'll hear them, it just becomes a weird, like, thing. So if that's all you have, that's all you have. But make the best choice you can for who's reading with you. I've had people who have taped themselves reading with themselves, and sometimes it works. You just have to have, you got to practice it. So it's a little Liv and Maddie, but you got to practice the timing, because I've had, like, it'd be like off camera, you hear, what time is it? And then you're waiting for your line, and it feels not so natural. But put some thought into it.
Thank you. That's fabulous advice. You've inevitably dealt with a lot of parents,
mm-hmm.
because you've directed a lot of young people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got actually an amazing career in terms of the different kinds of projects you've done, but you have directed a lot of young people, and I've seen you direct a lot of young people. Any advice for parents who are trying to help their young actors succeed in this business?
Exactly what you said. Help your child succeed. It is a very challenging aspect for people who are new to the industry. Daunting. Few people have managed it as beautifully as you, which led to writing successful books to help other people, which led to you being a dream parent on set, which led you to be a partner for us, and which led us to know that you were not a negative, and a lot of times the opposite can be true. The career, first and foremost, is your child's. As much as you might have wanted to live vicariously through them, and as much as sometimes there's wonderful financial opportunities, the child's career is what we're looking at. If the kid doesn't want to be there, the kid shouldn't be there. Nobody wants I'm a little teapot. And sort of, I have, like, you know, go out there and, like, perform. Sometimes where the parent's job, which is sort of like, and it's a weird thing because it's kind of like sending your kindergartner off to school. There's a trust factor. I'm going to take my child and put my child in the hands of strangers. And now from 8 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, I'm going to go home. I'm going to work. I'm going to think about, like, what if they fall? What if they're exposed to peanuts? What if they're... And by the way, it's a big, scary world. All of those are what every parent, we all as parents, go through. In film and television and theater, the same advice, which is you are bringing your child and putting them into an environment where we are asking you to step back. We are saying we are set up. We got a schoolhouse over here with an accredited teacher whose job it is to make sure your child's education continues in the manner that you are now, as a family, embarking upon. We have an entire crew whose job is to ensure the safety of your child. We have an entire food staff whose job it is to make sure your child eats. We have the law watching us every day to ensure the child is not working beyond the hours that they... So the first thing we're asking is trust us. Trust is hard. And we are going to make mistakes because people make mistakes. Usually those are learning mistakes in which, you know, it can be corrected. We didn't know that, no one told us that there had been a death in the family last week and that that's why we don't know, because we're also asking, like a professional athlete, like somebody who's training to do figure skating or someone who's training to do gymnastics at a young age and compete in the Olympics, we're asking you to be prepared because time is money. And 100 kids all auditioned for this part. 300 kids all auditioned for this part. We picked your kid. I need them to then know their material. I need them to know what they do when they come in because I need to make sure I made the right choice. And we'll help them. Sometimes the parents get too active involved in the creative side, which is maybe one of the hardest things. I have never hired an adult actor where the adult actor's parents call me and say, I know Jim's got a scene today. I think he should wear a different outfit. And I'm thinking Jim needs more lines. My guy would be like, you know, Jim's 45. And how did you get my number?
I'm dying over here. I'm dying because I've seen it. I have seen it.
Repeatedly. So at a certain point, that notion of what the agent and manager does, and then there are momagers, there are dadagers, and there's nothing wrong per se, as long as you are speaking correctly towards the industry and knowing that what is appropriate. The actor's job and the director's job and the writer's job and the producer is to create. My job is to work. One of my favorite things when we started Liv and Maddie was Dove and I working on building two different characters. Who was Liv and who was Maddie? And she would come to the office and we would talk about not just the acting of it, but what were these characters? How do they laugh? How do they talk? How do they sound? Because you weren't just building a character, you had to build two, and you had to snap and get one at a moment's notice. That's our job. I don't want to meet with you in that meeting to tell me your thought. And it's not that I don't think you're smart. But again, I'm like, I'm not going to call my mom right now and ask my mom how my directing's going. And so parents make that mistake, and usually, to be fair, I understand that they're in a weird position. There are set sitters who are just there to make sure they're reading a magazine and make sure everything's fine. Great, I get it. You're on location and you're there, and sometimes you're antsy, sometimes you're bored, sometimes like. Or you go back in the trailer and your kid says, I don't like that scene, and you feel the responsibility. The best thing the parent can say is you should talk to your director. You should go talk to the first AD. You should talk to the producer. That's what an actor does. And if you are going to help your child become an actor, help them become an actor. If you are going to interfere, the flip side happens, which is we then begin to, sadly, potentially put your child in a category of life might be too short. I have not cast actors, young actors, who specifically I have been told repeatedly by multiple sources that the parents were a nightmare on set. And I haven't cast that actor. And by the way, great actors, kids who I would have cast in a heartbeat. And it's probably a sad, unfair, penalizing thing from me.
But it's life.
But it's life.
Yeah.
And so I think like learning the business and understanding that we are hiring your child and not you. We have all departments covered. Your idea of what, you know, when people would come in and be like, I think she would look better in this different costume. I'm like, what's amazing is how much money we're spending on our costume designer to get their opinion, that your opinion feels weird right now. Your opinion feels not needed. And then it also causes us to form friction.
Right.
I don't want to avoid you on set. I don't want to be the looking at Betsy and being like, you got Bonnie. I'm out. You cover Bonnie.
I gotta cover. Get some work done.
But conversely with you, to your audience, to know what you did, which was so amazing, was your daughter had not one but two roles. She had a show that had two names in the title, both of which were her. She was not coming to it with a plethora of a lifetime of experience, nor were you. And we were working in a machine in which things had to get done. You were always so amazingly supportive and delightful, and that it made us go to you to ask, how's Dove holding up? And you would tell us. We learned from you how best to make Dove's life workable for us. But you were a part of our family. And, you know, because we had, you know, Tenzing's dad and Joey's parents, we had great parents on that show who were just a part of our world. And our parents, one of my favorite things was directing you and Clark in the end of Liv and Maddie. That made me happy because you were family and you were part of the team. Had you been difficult, you wouldn't have had that opportunity, and we would have been like, oh God, here she is again. Or how quickly can we get your child emancipated so we don't have to talk? So I think that's the biggest thing. And this business is clearly not for everybody. I have made a lifetime. Sometimes I have lost friends over my consistent plea. If there's anything else you think you can do or you want to do, go do it. Because if an ounce of you is thinking not to do the industry, there is somebody who is full up wanting to do it, they'll beat you. And the industry is too hard and you're going to be rejected too many times that I'm trying to get people out. Like, and knowing that the survival rate is hard enough that I will say, like, as many horrible things to you as I can as a reminder, like, that's the reality. You don't like it? Sorry. Didn't make the rules. Doesn't mean I support that. Doesn't mean, but I understand that's how, like, I wish we could cast every child, but we can't. I'm sorry little Timmy made it all the way and is crushed. I'm sorry you have to drive your child home who's in tears that he didn't get the movie. That's our industry. It's a business. So think fully about embarking on this as a career for your child because it is a career. That being said, the flip side is, man, bloom where you're planted. If you love acting, act in every school play. Take wherever you are in the world, act. You can act for the rest of your life doing community theater. You can act for the rest of your life, volunteer. Like, acting and a career as an actor can be two very different things. making a living, paying bills, is not always the same as, oh, I just got this part in the school play. And for me, I would say you could be doing all of that happily. As a parent, you've got to help steer that.
That is beautiful, Andy. And just to wrap up on that same note, just flipping it a little bit, any advice for somebody young who's, say, under 18, they're where they are, which is probably not LA or New York, and what can they be doing right now, wherever they are, to build track toward this dream that they may have of being in the industry?
So one of my favorite questions, because I feel like it is sometimes lost. You know, I just spent 6 months in London with Heathers and meeting wonderful actors and getting to spend time with Dove and Tommy. But acting, writing, direct, whatever your path is as when you're young, is so much more accessible now than ever before. If you want to be in this industry, learn the industry. There are a billion books written about the history of Hollywood. Learn the history of Hollywood. It is respectful because as a director, I am more likely to say to you, oh, can you do this more like Katharine Hepburn, sort of Spencer Tracy banter? If you don't know what that is, I'm now slowing down. Guaranteed somebody does. Guaranteed in an audition, I'll give that and somebody will know what I'm talking to. Because of streaming and Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and Apple, you can get every movie possible. There's no reason you are not studying at the feet of the people who came before you. Why are you not watching the greatest actors ever made? Why are you not seeing those performances? Why are you not studying the history of television and going back and be like, I don't know Mary Tyler Moore's show. I don't know All in the Family. Because guaranteed what we are doing, we in Hollywood are inspired by our past. Rarely have I ever met anyone around the world who doesn't tell me the movies and television and theater that inspired them. Well, that means that's going to be infused in our world. If you work with me and you know that how much Marx Brothers and Laurel and Hardy and Abbott and Costello and Three Stooges inspired me, how much the movie Airplane, Naked Gun, how much Animal House could be one of my all-time favorites. At the same time, why I like something like Exorcist or Rosemary's Baby or why Dirty Dozen or The Wild, but like, learn. You can do that sitting at home every day when you're done with your homework. If you want to act, you figure out your options in your town and your community. What does your school offer? What does your church offer? It's Christmas time. Who's doing the best Christmas pageant ever? What is your local community? Where are they having? They're having auditions and they're doing, you know, Mary Poppins at the local community theater and they need 10 kids. It's Nutcracker Suite. They're going to be looking for kids. Like, and then what are you doing? Are you taking dance? Are you learning a skill? Are you in, by the way, as a flip side, not only do you have one daughter who is ridiculously talented as an actor and a singer and all of that, you have another daughter who is a ridiculously talented singer who's helping to teach singing to break new voices into the world. I will watch her on internet and I will be like, I do not open my mouth wide enough when I talk. And apparently I am not doing enough for my jaw. But I love watching her do that with her kids because I love to see them come alive. All of that is available. So why not take advantage of it? If you are waiting to move to LA or move to New York to begin, you're failing. If you assume you will move to New York and move to LA and start, you're already behind. We are a melting pot in London. We are a melting pot of the kids. Every kid who was the star of every high school play is here. That's your competition. Every kid from every year, from every town, is here.
The best actor in every class.
The best actor in every school in the country is here. Unless they were like, or New York.
Right.
Or London. Or they just said, you know, it's too much competition. The best actor. Our town's not made up full of just, I was nothing but the guy who was in the corner quietly. That's not our town. So, if you are challenged by the audition process for Oklahoma your sophomore year in high school, guess what? Every Curly who's ever played Curly is here. And you lost Curly. And you don't want to come compete. So, it is to say you have to have eyes wide open when you come here. But you got to start right now.
Where you are.
Where you are. And you have to hunt for those opportunities. When you go around the country and tour, when the ridiculously talented Wendy Verone goes around and tours, who we love, who was our dialogue coach, one of the best acting coaches, and an amazing director. The insanely talented Chambers Stevens, who travels the country teaching acting kids. Go! Go!
Attend the workshop.
Attend the workshop. And by the way, you might go, well, it's $100 or however much it is, but you might learn this isn't for me. And that's it. Or you might learn, oh, this is for me. You can stay anywhere in the world and type in Samuel French Bookstore and buy Chambers acting books to get your books on Amazon. Like, anywhere. I started in Midland, Texas. I moved to Houston, Texas, and then I moved to Lubbock, Texas. And then to LA. But when I got here, as much as, and my accent was real thick because I came out sounding like this.
Really?
I was just straight here from Lubbock, and I was like, I want to be a director or maybe a writer or producer or some such nonsense. I love the creative arts like Smokey and the Bandit 1 and 2 and the Dukes of Hazzard trilogy. That was me. And I was really nervous when I moved here because I really was meeting everybody. As you know, my amazing wife, Kristen, went to Stanford. She went to Exeter. Like, she literally was like, she had this, her resume is like a mile long of a wonderful writer with this pedigree. And I was like, I'm from Lubbock, into the Stanford of West Texas. I was so nervous coming here and meeting people because I thought I don't know how to compete. But I knew more about film and television than they did because I went to movies every weekend. I watched everything on television. I read every book. I went to Blockbuster when you could go to Blockbuster. I'd rent 10 movies for the weekend and watch all 10. And by the way, all of that is so available right now for you. All of that opportunity for you to read, to watch every single thing. If you aren't wanting to act, but you say you don't watch a lot of movies, or you don't watch a lot of television, it's the equivalent of saying, I want to be a doctor, but I'm not interested in all of medical school. I think I can pass a couple of these things off. That drives me crazy. I'll be like, do you watch a lot of television? I don't find there's much on TV I like to watch. Oh, okay. So you're better than the entire industry. Now you're auditioning for my TV show and you're completely out of control. Like, and then I also think it's probably not even a person I want to be on set with. And I'm not going to get anything creative from you. You're not going to challenge me. You're not going to inspire me. You're kind of making me angry because you look at our industry as something you don't need to participate in. The fact that you, when you first wrote your first book, you had come through a process and seen it firsthand and realized, oh, I have learned a lot more than the day I showed up and was walking on set going, where do I sit? Your giving back that knowledge is priceless. And so for people who are sitting anywhere listening, that's what they should be doing. You got 81 episodes on your podcast. Go listen to 80 episodes. Go listen to everyone. I wish I was growing up now, because I would be so, I don't know if my career would be any different. I don't know if I'd have a career, but I would be so much more ready for the industry today with what's available for people.
Andy, thank you so much for your generosity and your love and your time and your talent.
I love you, Bonnie.
I love you right back. Hey, everybody who's listening, please go follow Andy. Keep track of him. He's doing the most amazing work. You can follow him on Instagram at Hair Director, which is spelled HERRDIREKTOR, and at Twitter at Andy Fickman. Andy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bonnie, and everyone. Good luck. Break a leg. Anybody can do it. Trust me, anybody can do it. I got that down pat.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, take a second and subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com, sign up at the bottom of the homepage to get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you're a young actor, or you want to be a young actor, or you're just curious about how your favorite actors got their start, buy my new book, Young Hollywood Actors, on Amazon. And if you're the parent of a young actor, you can get the Hollywood Parents Guide on Amazon, too. Finally, for one-on-one coaching, invest in a consultation session with me over phone, Skype, or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. In either 60 or 90 minutes, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.